As you know by now, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system. I've found that it helps people relax and can support restful sleep, a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand that I take personally and recommend to my patients is Plus CBD from CV Sciences, which is now proud to introduce a new innovation, Plus CBD Daily Balance THC-free. Daily Balance is a daily-use supplement that provides the benefits of CBD without the concern of other cannabinoids like THC causing unwanted effects. Daily Balance contains the purest form of hemp-derived CBD in high concentrations to help you overcome intense challenges to mental and physical well-being. All Plus CBD products are backed by science with clinically researched active ingredients. To learn more and to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's new Daily Balance THC-free line of oil, soft gels, and gummies. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about hypothyroidism with an expert. He's an academic physician, clinician, as well as a researcher, Dr. Antonio Bianco, MD, PhD, who has been a former president of the American Thyroid Association and conducts research currently at the University of Chicago with a lab funded by the National Institutes of Health to study thyroid hormones. And so the theme of today's discussion is why thyroid therapy has taken a bit of a wrong turn, because we've modernized our therapy. I remember one of my patients coming back to me. I had prescribed a, quote, natural thyroid, which is a porcine-derived armor thyroid. And she said, I said, how was it when you went to see the endocrinologist? She said, well, it was terrible. The endocrinologist said, well, why are you taking that piggy thyroid? The patient was disparaging me. They said it's so out of date. You know, people stopped using that in the 70s. And however, I think to better understand this, I'm going to ask you, Dr. Bianco, to give us a little primer on thyroid physiology, you know, because we're talking T4, T3, and what actually happens in the body when people take one or the other thyroid medications, either the levothyroxine, which is brand name Synthroid or other brands, or a mixture of T4 and T3. Some of those brands are natural. Some of those brands are actually synthetic combinations, because you can get them that way, T4 and T3. The T3 medications are sometimes referred to as Cytomel liothyronine.
Well, I mean, I think the principle here is that T4 is a weak hormone. We call it a prohormone, meaning that by itself, it can't do anything. In order for T4 to gain biological activity and actually resolve symptoms of hypothyroidism, T4 must be converted to T3. And these numbers have to do with the number of iodine atoms in the molecule. So T4 has 4 iodines, T3 has 3 iodines. So the removal of an iodine from T4 makes T3. And T3 is a potent molecule. What resolves symptoms of hypothyroidism is T3. It's not T4. Okay, that's really important. So when a patient has hypothyroidism and takes a tablet of T4, T4 must be converted to T3 in order to resolve the symptoms. So the basis of the treatment is this conversion of T4 to T3.
Which, by the way, it's kind of neat, because it provides kind of a slow, gentle release of thyroid.
Absolutely.
And that's why it was so accepted, because it was thought to avoid the jagged ups and downs, peaks and valleys that you get with T3, because T3 is short-acting. It's potent, but it's also short-acting. In fact, it might be so potent that it could send a patient into atrial fibrillation, right?
That's exactly right. Yes. No, you got it. So this is really physiological. You give some T4, and the body, with its wisdom, is going to convert slowly T4 to T3. And so the tissues, all the organs of the body, are going to receive that T3 and will go back to where they were before the patient developed hypothyroidism. Now, how much T4 do we give? How much levothyroxine we give? We looked at the hormone TSH, and TSH, which is normally very high in patients with hypothyroidism, it's going to start sensing that T4 is coming into the body, It's getting converted to T3. And so the TSH sees, well, there's a hormone around, so I don't have to be that high. So it starts going down, going down, going down. So this is called the feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm. So the tablet of T4 and the T3 that's generated in the body negatively feedback to the TSH, and TSH goes back to normal. Mm-hmm. So we hoped, when this therapy was developed, we hope and we understood that this TSH is a good gauge for how much thyroid hormone is in the body. So the rationale is, okay, so if TSH is normal, it means the liver is normal as well, the heart is normal, the brain is normal, everything is normal. So TSH can be used as a surrogate for me to know mm-hmm. how much thyroid hormone is around. And as it turns out, it can't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. The TSH is super sensitive to thyroid hormone in the circulation. Mm-hmm. The process of T4 to T3 conversion in the periphery that feeds the tissues and feeds the blood is less sensitive.
Right.
So there's a disconnect between the T3 that's generated for the plasma.
So to restate it, you can fix the TSH, make the TSH look good, put it in the normal range, but at the same time, you're not delivering enough T3 to the tissues.
Perfect.
Where the rubber
yes.
meets the road in the
exactly.
what we call the periphery, which means all the organs of the body and all the tissues of the body outside the thyroid, where the T3 acts within the cell. It actually doesn't act in the bloodstream. It actually acts and in some cases is converted from T4 to T3 within the cell. So
right.
the question, and you actually describe this beautifully in the book, is what's the hang up? Why in some people does T4 convert nicely to T3? People feel good. It's all good. You know, they're very happy with it. And for some people, that T4 to T3 conversion is not efficient. It's bollocksed up for some reason.
Right. We know one mechanism through which this happens. I mean, there could be other mechanisms, but there's a genetic polymorphism in one of the enzymes. There's this little engine.
In the deiodinase.
Deiodinase, exactly, that converts T4 to T3. Half of the population carries a polymorphism. It's a large number. 50% of at least one allele of the gene, if you add heterozygous and homozygous with the allele, you're going to have 50% of the population.
Huh.
They have a slower enzyme. It's a lazy enzyme. Mm-hmm. The enzyme doesn't convert T4 to T3 as fast as it should. Therefore, I have a situation in which the TSH is normal and lack T3 for the periphery, for the cells.
Mm-hmm.
And we never realized that. Why? Because we don't care about T3 in the plasma. We don't measure. We don't even measure it. What we've been told by guidelines is stick to TSH. You give levothyroxine, give T4, and measure TSH. If some patients come and say, "Doctor, my T3 is low. What should I do? This is probably not good. I read in the internet that T3 is the active hormone." And that's where starts the idea that you need to give a combination therapy. You need to give some T4 mixed with T3 because you want to bring that T3 back to normal. Right. Now you would think that, well, is this a defect? It's probably, of course, the genetic polymorphism is a little bit of a defect, but the system was evolved to be like that. And why is that? Simply because the thyroid secretes both T4 and T3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the biggest problem is. The thyroid does one thing, secretes a mixture of T4 and T3. And we think that we can treat hypothyroid just with one
with
hormone.
T4, yeah.
Exactly.
It's not natural.
So if there was no disconnect between TSH mm-hmm. and the periphery, there would be no room for the T3 from the thyroid to come. So there's got to be, this is physiological because it needs to create this space for the T3 coming directly from the thyroid.
Now, you point out in your book something quite interesting that I had never realized is that when you administer T4, it actually suppresses the thyroid's own production to some extent, and thereby suppresses the thyroid's contribution to T3. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The thyroid, you see, the thyroid adjusts how much T3 produces.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of the thyroid system, and this is something we only realized a few years ago, the whole point of having a thyroid is to have a normal T3 in the plasma. What regulates the thyroid is T3 in the plasma. The thyroid cares a lot about having a normal T3 in the plasma. Now, when we lose the thyroid, we lose that ability of adjusting how much T3 I'm producing. So if a patient has a genetic polymorph, but the thyroid is normal, the thyroid will just adjust for that. So there's no problem. If there's a deiodinase problem, it doesn't really matter. We'll never know because the thyroid is adjusting how much T3 is producing. Mm-hmm. Now, the minute the patient develops hypothyroidism, and now the treatment depends on the enzyme that converts 4 to T3, that's when you have the problem. Mm-hmm. Because that enzyme is faulty. It was being compensated by a thyroid gland, but we don't have a thyroid anymore. So all of this brings us to the point where it makes a lot of sense to treat patients with a combination of T4 and T3. We're just mimicking what the thyroid does. That's it.
So there's also a condition which I learned about academically, but I don't understand it that well, is something called sick euthyroid syndrome, where patients who are very ill, and there are many patients with, you know, serious medical conditions, or they have an autoimmune mm-hmm. disease, just feeling crappy, and you know, they're like, you know, the walking wounded. And that kind of physiology inhibits the activation of T3. I believe that's the way that works. Is that something that could also interfere with T4 to T3 conversion?
Yes. I mean, it does. It does not play a major role in treatment of hypothyroidism, but you're absolutely right. If you go to a hospital where you have patients that are, they're not healthy, right? Yep. So that's why they are in the hospital. 70% of those patients have low thyroid hormones in the circulation. Mm-hmm. They have low T4, low T3. And the funny thing is that the TSH doesn't go up. You would think that if you have low T3 and T4 in the blood, the TSH is going to go up. No, that's why we call it euthyroid 6 syndrome or low T3 syndrome, or, just reflects the general health status of that patient being not so good. And who detects that in the blood, in the body, is the hypothalamus.
Yeah.
The hypothalamus senses that there's something wrong. Cytokines, interleukins start affecting the hypothalamus.
Inflammatory factors,
Right. And the hypothalamus, therefore, shuts down stimulation of the thyroid gland. And the thyroid slowly stops producing or slows down the production of thyroid hormone. You're right. The conversion of T4 to T3 also slows down in the periphery. So the goal is to decrease the amount of thyroid hormone to which the tissues are exposed. And we think that this is an adaptive process. It's not a defective process because you're just slowing down metabolism.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sick, you're not eating very well. And if you can trigger this syndrome by stopping eating. So if you lower your calories, if you eat less than 800, 700 calories per day, you're going to have euthyroid 6 syndrome.
Think some of the people on Ozempic and some of these weight loss drugs may be courting that kind of situation potentially with a very low calorie diet?
If you're eating less than 800 calories per day, yes, you are. Okay. You're going to have euthyroid 6 syndrome. Yeah. And it's a protective mechanism triggered by the hypothalamus. And
the body wants to go into kind of a slow motion to slow the metabolism, to slow fat burning, and to in the face of potential starvation, right?
Very right. And once you recover from your illness, everything goes back to normal. Okay. Once you start eating again, everything goes back to normal.
Okay. So So the argument is, let's give people T3. But as you well know, there are problems with T3. And you probably, as a, you know, second opinion or third opinion doctor, you probably have seen some people who've come in, perhaps they've been to an integrative physician like myself, who's been very overzealous and given them, you know, huge amounts of a natural thyroid that has T3 in it, and they have problems. What are some of the problems that can occur when you OD on T3? I mean, in a way, it peps people up. A lot of people want that caffeinated feeling. You know, we're a go-go-go society. A lot of people reach for Adderall. But the thyroid can act in the same way as kind of a stimulant, right?
Right. So you're absolutely right. We have to be careful with T3 and also with T4. I mean, it's both do the same thing. If you're taking too much, if you overdose on these two hormones, both T3 and T4, you will increase your chances of having atrial fibrillation. You increase your chances of having a stroke, and your bones are going to suffer as well, because thyroid hormone will accelerate the metabolism of bone. It will increase resorption of bone. And you may have, if this happens for a long time, you can have osteoporosis, and you end up having a fracture. Yep. So that's not good. So when I say we should treat patients for hypothyroidism, for those that we decide to give T3, is not to give a lot of T3. What's the goal of giving a combination therapy? The goal is to reduce the levels of T4 a little bit and increase the levels of T3 a little bit, mm-hmm. without suppressing the TSH. You can't suppress the TSH, because if you bring the TSH to undetectable levels, then you're causing thyrotoxicosis. You're mm-hmm. bringing the patient to a situation. You're taking them from hypothyroidism and bringing them to hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. And that's not the goal. And many patients argue with me, saying, no, but TSH, it's not good. You yourself is saying TSH is not good. No, but wait, we have to be careful.
Yeah.
How was it that before when you had a healthy thyroid, how was your TSH? Was normal. How was your T4? Normal. How was your T3? Normal. This is what you want to go back to, that situation, in as if you had a normal thyroid. So you need to have a normal TSH, a normal T3, and a normal T4. And when you only give levothyroxine, you cannot do that. That's the key point. When you treat someone with levothyroxine, you normalize TSH. T4 is higher than normal. In 40% of the patients, they will have T4 levels that are higher than normal. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, all the T4s are higher.
Yeah.
And if you look at the T3, they're all lower.
Yeah.
And 17% of the patients are with T3 below the normal range. Mm-hmm. So it can't be, right? It can't be that we're just looking at the TSH and creating a situation that you have an excess of T4 and a deficit of T3.
Is a T3 blood test reliable? Because we know that actually a lot of T3 is intracellular. So is the level right. that's in the bloodstream reflective of what's happening in the tissue, in the brain, or in the muscles, you know, where essentially T3 is doing its job, or doing its job in the adipose tissue to adequately be a fat burner?
Right. Excellent question. So the T3 in the plasma is in equilibrium with the tissues.
Okay.
So if I measure T3 in the plasma, I know how much is in the heart, I know how much is in the muscle, I know how much is in the liver, because they're in equilibrium. It's like looking at two swimming pools that are okay. connected. Mm-hmm. I measure the level in one, I will know the level of the other one. However, in the brain is not like that. Oh. Because the brain has its own economy of thyroid hormone, it has yes. all those deiodases. So looking at T3 in the plasma might not tell me exactly how much T3 is in the brain, mm-hmm. especially for those patients that have a defect, have the polymorphism. So the polymorphism is particularly important for the brain, because so much of the T3 in the brain is produced inside the brain. It doesn't come from the blood. Now, You ask something else as well. You ask, is the method that measures T3 reliable?
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been very good. When you measure TSH and free T4, those are really solid, robust assays.
Yeah.
T3 is not that robust.
Okay.
So we think that we obviously, because the industry did not care about developing a very good T3 assay because nobody's measuring T3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since we are focusing more on T3, there are a few places that are doing T3 by mass spec, for example, which is the gold standard.
So well, there's T3 and free T3 as well. There's a two, sometimes you get two different values.
Yeah, you could get free. Yes, free T3 is it's not as good as total T3, which is not what happens with T4. Free T4 is much better than total T4, but the free T3 is even more variable than the total T3.
Oh.
So, but that should not be an excuse not to focus on T3.
Okay.
I mean, it should be an what that should tell us. Yeah, we need to measure T3 by mass spec or to develop an assay that's better than one we have right now. But that should not be the reason why we're not focusing on T3.
So some of your research is devoted to looking at better options for prescribing T3, because let's say we want to give a balanced thyroid, and it's going to be a T4, T3 combination. And so a patient might take it at 6:30 in the morning upon awakening, away from food. And that T3 is going to act for, approximately 6 hours? Is that correct? Does it stick around longer?
On the dose. It depends on the dose that you take.
But it's short acting.
Oh, yeah. It will peak by 3 hours and then three, four more hours, maybe 8 hours. That T3 is going to last for about 8 hours.
So that would suggest that people should either take divided doses of medication, which I do for some patients.
That's actually the standard.
One patient who swears that the only way she feels good is by taking Armour Thyroid, 15 milligrams, 4 times a day. Can you claim to have any patient who over 10 or 15 years has been compliant with a 4-time-per-day dosing schedule?
Yeah.
It's amazing, but that's the way that she feels good, by small doses throughout the day.
Yeah, 60 milligrams, and the dose is reasonable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that the holy grail here is to develop a T3 molecule that will last longer in the circulation.
Right.
So that you don't have to be popping those pills. There are some pharmaceutical companies are developing new processes. It's either a slow production or a slow absorption, different technologies involved. And I hope that within the next few years, we're going to have that in the market.
Mm-hmm. Your credentials are impeccable. In fact, you have been recognized by the American Thyroid Association with an award. You were also past president of the American Thyroid Association. But have you encountered resistance to your message? I mean, you're a credible guy. You're not like some renegade, like a voodoo practitioner.
Right.
How well is your message being received lately by your colleagues?
I think, I can tell you what's happening, right? So I've been invited to give talks basically twice a month since I published the book and since I started with this research. So I think it has been very well received. The American Thyroid Association, its journal, Clinical Thyroidology, did a review on my book. And I've been invited to the program of the American Thyroid Association. I'm going to actually speak twice the next meeting. The Endocrine Society has invited me to speak twice. I did a tour in the UK where I spent 2 weeks traveling to different hospitals and universities giving tours. I spoke, it's been very busy. I think the message is coming across. And we have a study that we recently did in which we showed that combination therapy has doubled in the last 10 years in the United States, which is more or less when I started. Obviously, I don't want to give the false impression that I'm the only person working on this thing. There are others working. The Europeans have been working combination therapy much earlier than we were here. But Here in the U.S., the last 10 years saw doubling. So today, 10% of all patients on hypothyroidism, they start on combination therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's phenomenal. I think that's proof that people are listening. And the other thing that's happening is the clinical guidelines from societies have changed. Now we have the American Thyroid Association, the British Thyroid Association, the European Thyroid Association, and the Society for Endocrinology, which is the one in the UK. They all recommend combination therapy for those patients that fail with levothyroxine. So they say, start with levothyroxine, which I think is perfectly fine. Start with levothyroxine. Most likely you're going to feel fine, and that's the end of it. But if you don't feel fine, you should try combination therapy. And that's what all the guidelines say. And I'm thrilled to see that change happening in the last few years.
And by the way, many of the insurance companies, including Medicare, do not cover natural desiccated thyroid treatment. And it actually came up during the 2016 presidential campaign when it was revealed that Hillary Clinton was taking natural thyroid, for which she had to pay out of pocket. She wasn't getting Medicare reimbursement, even though she was of Medicare age.
It's because I think, I don't know the details, but I suspect it's because it's not fully approved by the FDA. Mm-hmm. So the FDA now has asked all the companies that work with desiccated thyroid extract to get a full approval, something they did not ask for levothyroxine, as we discussed. They asked now for, so as a result, all of these companies that you mentioned, they are doing clinical trials. They are spending the millions of dollars on clinical trials with desiccated thyroid extract. And the amazing thing is that we are learning so much from these trials because they have to do it in the right way because they have to present that for the FDA. So I just, you know, I can't believe that the FDA did not ask for those trials for
initially,
levothyroxine. Yeah, that's a shame.
So I wanted to throw something else out, is that the majority of patients with hypothyroidism suffer from Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease. So could another reason that patients still feel kind of crummy, even when they get the right amount of thyroid, is that they're suffering from an autoimmune disease that has other manifestations, you know,
absolutely
throughout the body?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you have autoimmunity, you're killing your thyroid, but chances are you also are producing antibodies against other parts of your body. Mm-hmm. There are studies showing that patients with Hashimoto's have high titer of antibodies anti-brain, for example. So you could have vitiligo, which is another autoimmune disease. So it's likely you're going to have a second autoimmune
association
condition.
With celiac disease, for example.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely right. So it is that's why before we go thinking into combination therapy, we need to do a screening at that patient. We need to eliminate other conditions that could cause the same symptoms. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a simple example, menopausal syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't distinguish the symptoms of perimenopausal with the hypothyroidism.
It's a double whammy.
You know, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you know, you should just wear your hat, your physician hat, and just think about it, right? So what else is happening with this patient? And you're not going to give combination therapy if the patient has an FSH that's elevated and has it's going into menopause. So you want to resolve all the symptoms as best as you can. And then if the patient continues with symptoms, then you're going to go and try combination therapy. But chances, I mean, the question is, how many patients are going to really resolve with combination therapy? Because let's say if the symptoms are coming from antibodies anti-brain, you're not going to fix with just giving T3. Mm-hmm. So studies have shown that at least 60% of the patients with residual symptoms respond positively to combination therapy.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. Yep. I think that's very good.
Yeah, no, that's a good track record. You know, finally, for our many listeners who, you know, take nutritional supplements, there are many supplements that purport to, quote, support the thyroid, you know, things that contain kelp or iodine, sometimes SSKI, like really strong iodine compounds. Selenium has been proposed as something that helps the thyroid. And I notice in your book you talk about how selenium may be a cofactor with deiodinase. Is there any plausibility to using these things as kind of hamburger helper for your thyroid with or without medication?
So, I mean, selenium is the one that's, I think, most likely, even though we don't have real clinical trials, there's some studies showing that selenium, but it's not because of its role in the deiodination, okay. It's its antioxidant role.
Okay.
So apparently, if you take supplemental selenium, you're going to reduce your oxidative stress in the thyroid. You could slow down the progression of Hashimoto's. There are a few studies showing that, although we don't have a robust randomized clinical trial to prove that. So that's why it's on the guidelines still. But I think that has future. Now, as far as the taking iodine and taking other supplements that we don't even know what's in there, because I suspect there are many supplements that have just desiccated thyroid extract that's in there. Many patients come for a second opinion with a suppressed TSH, and I ask, are you taking any thyroid supplements? Yeah, so stop taking it, then TSH goes back mm-hmm. to normal again. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always important to know what's in the supplement. I don't think we need to take massive doses of iodine. In fact, that's not good. Iodine should be taken at about 150 micrograms per day for non-pregnant individuals. If you have a woman that's pregnant, you should probably bump that up to 250 micrograms per day, mm-hmm. But not more than that. An excess of iodine is also bad, not as bad as a deficiency of iodine, mm-hmm. but can cause autoimmune processes, an excess of iodine. So I would worry about those supplements. Mm-hmm. I think that the only thing we should, especially pregnant women, should make sure that they're taking every day the right amount of iodine, which is about 250 for pregnant women, 150 for non-pregnant. And but other supplements, selenium maybe, but I don't have any good feelings about the other supplements.
And I have to agree with you. Although, you know, I do prescribe supplements, you know, when it comes to thyroid, I tell patients say, well, I don't want to take medication. I say, you know, we're just simply replacing something natural that your body makes. It's not like, you know, when we prescribe Prozac, it's not like your body has a Prozac deficiency.
Right,
we're actually addressing, and that's one of the reasons I love endocrinology, because we're actually addressing imbalances by providing people a natural boost. I also wanted to ask about another supplement, which is of concern with regard to the thyroid, and that is biotin. There's a lot of women who take biotin for their hair, skin, and nails, sometimes at high doses. And what happens if you're taking a biotin supplement and then you go for a thyroid test?
Yeah, that affects the results of the thyroid test. So you should stop 48 hours before taking the test or follow the instructions of the laboratory. They will tell you, but you need to inform the laboratory. Usually, most places, it's 48 hours because that affects the way the hormones are measured in the blood.
Yeah.
So you should be aware of that.
Okay. Good stuff. Anything else you want to add? I like give people a heads up to, let's mention again, the book is Rethinking Hypothyroidism, Why Treatment Must Change and What Patients Can Do. And mercifully, you tell patients who are reading it, lay people, that they can skip some of the heavy biochemistry in the middle of the book. But if you're a clinician, you really want to read that because you want to have a really good understanding of what this is all about. There's a website, and it's deiodinase.org, and that's kind of where you describe your research. And there's some really nice graphics there, beautiful illustrations which explain how the thyroid works and, you know, the different pathways. So that's a good place to start if people want to catch up on your work. Can we expect – I wanted to also mention, because you talk about this in your book, you mentioned early on that people had transplants of thyroid tissue. Well, that didn't work out. Then they got injections of thyroid tissue. That didn't work out so well. History may be coming full circle because we're actually talking about regenerative medicine to regenerate the thyroid. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, that's still on the drawing boards, but maybe in the future we can return to robust thyroid.
That's
function.
An amazing thing.
Yeah.
Yes. So today we have technology that we can take skin cells, transform these cells in stem cells in the laboratory. And use certain cocktails of growth factors that we can make something that's called an organoid. And the organoid is sort of an organ, looks like an organ. That's why it's called an organoid. But it's a thyroid. And people have taken that organoid of thyroid and injected into hypothyroid mice. Hmm. And they cure the hypothyroidism in the mice. So once you inject intramuscular, those thyroid cells from the organoid will implant in the muscle. Some of those cells will actually home to the neck and sit in the neck where they are supposed to be. But the important thing is that they will be able to physiologically produce T3 and T4 and resolve will normalize TSH in a mouse that was normally hypothyroid. So how far are we from doing that from humans? We have the technology. We need money. We need someone, hopefully the NIH or pharmaceutical company, to invest heavily on this, because what we need is to avoid rejection. The way you avoid rejection is customizing. You start with the fibroblast from the patient. So it's sort of you can see that this is going to be expensive because it's going to be a process.
It has to be individualized. Yeah.
Yes. That's one way of doing it. You individualize. The other way is before you transplant the organoid, you have to kill the antigens of that cell. It's possible to do that so that when you transplant the organoid, the immune system is not going to recognize that cell. Some of those HLA antigens can be deleted from those cells. So, and then we have to, you know, the organoid is a collection of cells. They're not 100% thyroid cells. They're a mixture of stem cells. So people worry that we're going to transplant some cancer, some cell that's going to go berserk, start dividing like crazy.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that. So we need to develop ways of separating those cells and only transplanting the thyroid organoids. Mm-hmm. I think this is fascinating. We need more money for that kind of research, but we are right there.
Right. Well, that's regenerative medicine. We'll be able to regenerate, tired pancreases to make insulin again and so on.
Right. Exactly. That's been done already.
And the same thing may eventually happen for thyroid, but that's not ready for prime time. And we must rely on mixed thyroid formulations at this point, judiciously applied. That's, I think, the take-home message of your book, Rethinking Hypothyroidism. I want to thank you for your generous offering of your time. And also, I also want to commend you for, stepping out of the box a little bit, because as a mainstream endocrinologist, I think it takes a little bit of gumption, a little bit of courage to say, hey, maybe let's reexamine some of our assumptions and address patients' concerns, because it's actually, this is a patient-driven movement to a large extent. Patients have support groups, and there's a lot of exchange of information on the internet, and they're clamoring for better treatment. And I think you deserve credit for listening, which I think is an important lost skill among physicians.
That's right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your kind words. I think that in shows like yours is the only way we can take this message to the public. And
indeed,
the public, including the thousands of physicians that are out there as well. So, this is really a very important thing that you're doing. Thank you very much.
My great pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Antonio Bianco. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their health care professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands that I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.